This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's say good morning to Chris Canty. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. Another night light on sleep. I tell you, they're playing out the string with these election results, but it's 2020. Everything is upside down, so why would we think this would be any different? But all in all, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
I'm okay. I actually just, let's say good morning to Rick. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing good, David. Been up all night, early into the morning, working on the CMT.
Really?
Well, it's a mid-season edition.
It is. Is this a special edition of CMT today at 10:30?
Don't you feel like every CMT is special
now? Well, that's
now?
Why I'm wondering why you're putting more focus and emphasis into this specific CMT.
Well, because it's really all we have at the moment. Let's be completely honest.
Do we have like mid-season awards, Rico? What are we doing with CMT? Ooh.
We do.
A little CMT teaser?
Yeah, we got a little mid-season MVP. Got all sorts of stuff.
Okay. Really?
Right. Most disappointing team. Sure, the
disappointing
Cowboys
team.
Will be on that list.
Yeah, I'm sure Santiago's going to be interested in that one.
Poor Santiago. He didn't know who his quarterback's going to be this weekend.
could be Cooper Rush.
Could be Garrett Gilbert. Who knows? You never know.
They have a plethora of choices down there.
And luckily for them, they got a tomato can with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes.
That should be a fun one.
They should. Well, I haven't seen the number because it was off the board for a while. Do you know what the number is on the Steelers and Cowboys game?
Stand by.
I actually have the odds up now because
we got
Mr.
Vegas checking out the numbers for it.
It's 14. Currently 14.
14. Yep.
I may dabble in Thursday night football. I'm telling you that right
really?
Now.
Really?
May dabble.
What's the? Can we agree that if this was a regular Sunday game, they probably wouldn't be playing this game tonight?
Yes.
Well, no, they don't have bye. They don't have any time to reschedule it.
Yeah.
Or push it out to a Tuesday something. I mean,
what's
not
Thursday
a standalone
night?
Game that they want desperately to get on the air. Should they really be playing this game?
Yeah, take the integrity in you know being fair and throw that right out the window. They don't care about that. and they're so smart too. And Canty asked this question a couple different times yesterday about, you know, 16 teams, you know, making the playoffs. It works out perfectly for them. Just think about this. That would mean they're going to have a week 18. And the reason why you have 16 now is because you don't want to give that number one seed a bye because it's just too much time.
Right.
So what they're telling you is we'll have week 18. We'll play all the games that we need to play. We're not going to cancel games. We'll just move them to week 18. So we'll play all those games. And then on top of it, we'll add two more playoff games.
And make more money.
Because if they add playoff games, they add more playoff revenue with players at controlled costs.
Exactly.
Yeah, but they're also greasing the skids and opening the door for an 18-week regular season.
So smart.
They're brilliant. They're brilliant.
we're gonna take
COVID and use it as a way to be able to get the schedule exactly how we want it.
But isn't this the one league we've said the entire time? They don't care. They like I really believe that some of the other leagues at least try to put a mirage on it that this is in the best interest of somebody. I think the NFL is just like, we don't care. We're going to play games.
Well, I don't think the other professional sports leagues have to deal with. Well, not even. Let me frame it a little bit differently. I think the unions in the other professional sports leagues are a lot stronger than the NFLPA. And as a result, the owners are usually able to manipulate the players in order to get exactly what they want, recognizing that the career span for the average NFL player is less than 4 years. So if you're an NFL player, do you want to spend time and potentially miss games or a season haggling over negotiating points? Or do you want to go out there and take advantage of, you know, the opportunity to play professional football and get paid? Because you don't have very long. It's different in baseball and basketball. So I think the owners always have this built-in leverage over the players. And now with COVID going on, I think the owners are using this as an opportunity to experiment with the schedule, like we said Major League Baseball should, like we said the NBA should, and try to figure out exactly what they like and whether or not they're able to get some traction. And if they do, guess what? The schedule will resemble more of what we're seeing this year moving forward.
I mean, you're already seeing it too. I mean, they went with no preseason, and we'll see how that works out.
Right.
Because in order to get the extra week and the extra, you know, the 18th game that we want, then we'll just eliminate preseason. Because we've already shown we don't need it. A lot of these teams don't even need practice, they think, at this point. Because they're just playing these games. I mean, Tennessee, the fact that Tennessee missed 2 weeks and all of a sudden shows up and does what they
great.
Did.
Played fantastic. Maybe their best game of the year.
Well, remember, the argument for preseason, Rico, was the quality of football, right? But I think the NFL is realizing, based on what they're seeing in the early returns and the television ratings, that the quality doesn't necessarily matter as much as having the product on TV.
That's right.
Yeah, so if you have more regular season games, if that costs you, if that means that you got to sacrifice the entire preseason, who cares? If we got more regular season games and playoff expansion, who cares about the preseason game?
How bad do you think, and I don't even know if there's like a depth to it, the level and brand of football would have to be for people to be like, you know what, I just can't watch this. I can't even envision that happening.
Dave, I don't know that you're going to see a high quality of football tonight in that 49ers-Packers game, but guess what? You're going to have a lot of folks locked in watching that game.
As long as you're
people will watch Giants Washington football team or Giants Eagles, horrific NFC East squads. People are going to lock in and watch those games. That should tell you all you need to know about the power of the NFL brand.
As long as you get good quarterback play and you have that, I mean, the stars are healthy. It doesn't matter what the brand of football looks like.
That's true.
Well, you got terrible quarterback play in that Giants Eagles Thursday night game between. Well, not that one. I'm talking about the Sunday night game between the Giants and the Eagles and the Cowboys.
No, that was
where
awful.
It was Ben DiNucci and Carson Wentz. It was terrible quarterback play. But people watched it.
But it's still Cowboys and Eagles.
Yeah, and people talked about it. It dominated the sports shows the next day.
Yeah, and it was a one possession game with 5 minutes to go. So
but was that was almost like that was almost like the polar opposite. Like, let's see how bad Ben DiNucci actually is.
I guess what I'm saying is, Rico, no matter what the storylines are going into those games, no matter what the records are for those teams, people are going to watch the NFL.
The NFL is king, and they know it.
It is, and they can pretty much do what they want.
There's nothing.
But I think they look at it as more is better, and I'm not necessarily sure that they're wrong with that philosophy. Just because
if there was a week 18, Chris, if there's a week 18, would you be like, oh, God, another week of
– no.
Or would you be like, great, I get another week of football?
Dave, we'd be excited about it. We'd be talking about the playoff implications, even though half the teams in the NFL could potentially make the playoff field. We wouldn't get enough of it. Could you imagine what wild card weekend would be like?
So they'd have what?
16 teams in the playoffs?
I guess they'd have to overlap games.
It would probably be a good idea to let these teams know at some point, though. You know what I mean? Like, if you're one of these teams, like if you're the Steelers battling because you want that first round bye, and all of a sudden you get into week 15, and like, oh, hey, by the way, you know, all that hard work you did, doesn't matter. You're going to play.
Yeah, but they would have a bye week, though, wouldn't they?
Not if there's 1-8-2-7-3-6-4-5.
Yeah, but they're saying that you would have to add, like, if you couldn't get all of the games in a week 18, you would go with a 16. No, they were saying that even if you had a week 18 and you couldn't get all the games in, then they would go to an expanded playoff format.
Yeah, but if you had 16, you wouldn't have to not play a game to advance. You would still have to win the game to advance.
No. I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is if the Steelers get all of their regular season games in, but the NFL has to add a week 18 just because
then
there's
they
some
get
other
week 18
teams,
is their bye,
then they don't have any game to play in week 18.
Gotcha.
No, but yeah.
So they have a bye week built in.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if you have a bye. It's not the bye week that's the most important thing. It's the fact that you don't have to. You're not playing a game to advance to the next round.
Right. You get a free.
You get a
shot
free win
the first round of the postseason.
Well, yeah, guys, I understand that. That's important. I get it. It's better to be when we used to talk about it based on the playoff field as it was constituted years ago. We used to say it's better to be 1 of 8 than 1 of 12. Right. That's what we used to say. It's better to be 1 of 8 than 1 of 12. You automatically have a better chance of getting to the championship game or the Super Bowl. So I get the importance of a bye week, but we're talking about from a rest standpoint, you know, making sure that your guys are ready to go. If you don't have to play in week 18, that's still an advantage.
Yeah, it's an advantage, but it's not I have to win one less game to win a championship.
No. If they add the eighth team in each conference, then that one seed which thought they had this tremendous advantage gets penalized, definitely.
Yeah, and then you run the risk of someone getting hurt in that game. Then now you don't have available for the next, even if you win.
We said this back in April, May, June, remember? Like, are we going to complain? Like, if it means, okay, no. The 16 teams go to the postseason and Pittsburgh and Seattle get screwed because of it. All right, you know what? It's a pandemic, for God's sakes. And we don't have fans in the stands, for God's sakes. I mean, if that's what it is, that's what it is.
Yeah, the NFL has decided that integrity and, you know, how fair this is going to be, you can throw all that out the window. That doesn't matter at this point.
No. I mean, if someone goes back to my original point, If so, the Niners wouldn't be playing tonight. They would say, listen, we got to clean the facility, and we have to make sure that, that Trent Williams and all these guys that have come into contact with Kendall Bourne and all these guys are actually safe, and we'll push it back to Monday or Tuesday. That's what they would do if they were doing the right thing, but they don't want to lose out on the Thursday night game.
So those guys, so they're all out?
They're all out.
They're all out, yeah.
Well, Kendall Bourne is out. Brandon Ayuk is out. Trent Williams is out. They're all out.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, and I'll have to look, I couldn't even tell you who's starting at wide receiver for the Niners tonight.
I just actually saw the list, and
have you heard of them?
I've heard of a couple of them. Yeah.
He said, "Have you heard of?"
It's going to be touch and go because I mean, got to remember too.
Really?
You got no George Kittle either.
They don't have Tevin Coleman.
They don't have Raheem Mostert.
They don't have Jeff Wilson.
Get rid of Dante Pettis?
Yep. Yeah. The Giants got Dante Pettis.
Giants picked him.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'm not familiar with Trent Taylor or Richie James.
By the way, it's not, you get me all confused. It's not Kendall, but it's Kendrick Bourne. You keep calling him Kendall.
All right, does it really matter?
Well, yeah, a little bit.
That's the man's name, Dave.
It's the guy's name. Kendrick, have some respect.
Ken, I get the Ken right. Ken Bourne.
Don't you get
Ken Bourne?
Yeah, Ken Bourne.
Cousin of Jason?
Yes.
They could use Jason Bourne at this point.
Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
Very dangerous. You don't want to mess with Ken Bourne. Trent Taylor. Oh, they have Tavon Austin, Richie James. Should be great.
Yeah, it should be great if you're going to take Green Bay tonight.
See what the number is on this game now?
Yeah, seven, but the 49ers are a fluky team, though. The 49ers are capable of blowing the doors off you with backups. Like, this is one of those teams that's so up and down. The variance that you get from week to week with the 49ers, I mean, it's unbelievable.
But isn't this almost like a double motivation game for the Packers?
What, revenge?
Yeah, they got embarrassed at home against a division rival.
No, they got embarrassed by Minnesota, and on top of it, they got embarrassed by San Francisco
twice last year, but in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. It's like double motivation. And for some reason, Aaron Rodgers playing in California is not good for him for some reason. You think he'd show out? I mean, that's where he's from, but he hasn't.
This is his home state.
Making a move at the deadline still makes no sense to me at all. I understand their philosophy, but still.
Who, the Packers?
No, yeah, even on defense.
Their defense is awful. Their defense, awful. I think, is a bigger concern than that second receiver. At least Alan Lazard is coming back.
What were you going to do defensively, though?
I don't know. Maybe try to get Steve McClendon instead of letting Tampa get Steve McClendon. Like, beef up the inside of your line a little bit so you don't get gashed every time you go against a team that can run the football.
They can't stop anybody.
I hear you. But, I mean, the Packers are a team that, like Dan said yesterday, they value their draft picks. Like, they don't usually make a lot of splash moves in free agency. They don't make a lot of trades because they want to hold on to their draft picks.
Yeah, I just don't know how many more years were there. I mean,
they don't got. Does it matter how many more years? They just drafted Jordan Love in the first round.
No.
They don't care.
They don't even dress him. And then A.J. Dillon, he doesn't do anything. He's out with COVID now. Yeah, he's done nothing for the whole season.
He's a COVID guy also.
He ends up being the one that exposes Jamal Williams, so he can't play.
He's not allowed to play. No, none of these guys can play.
So you're hoping Aaron Jones can play?
Who's Green Bay starting at running back? Philip Irvin? Is that who I saw?
Yeah, Swervin' Irvin. And then maybe Aaron Jones.
Swervin' Irvin.
And then maybe Aaron Jones because he's questionable right now.
Right, potentially can come back. But you know what? Won't matter to me. 8:30 tonight, I'll be locked in.
Well, of course you will be. I mean, what else? There's nothing else to watch.
Well, I could watch election coverage.
You have plenty of time to watch that. This thing's going to just keep dragging on and on.
On and on and on. Doesn't feel like
it's 2020. We can't come up with a better way to count votes.
No, doesn't seem it.
It's amazing to me. It's amazing.
Did you see? It was very funny. And we'll get into the Jets and Giants in a second. 800-919-3776. They did like, have you seen John King on CNN doing his Telestrator thing?
I have, yeah.
They put the NFL music behind him. Like the Sunday countdown music behind him doing it. It changes the entire dynamic. It's very, very funny.
He's awesome. We need something at this point, though.
I can't believe he can be so on for so long.
This guy's a real pro.
He's a pro, man.
That red light goes on, man. You're on.
Is there anybody better at the touchscreen than John King?
No.
I don't think so either.
Because he's got to analyze information And he's got to know, you know, this button, that button, you know, pressing. He's opening up counties. He's got this.
You know what the most impressive part is, Dave? You just mentioned it. The fact that he knows all of these counties. That's he's insane.
He's opening up counties.
He is. He's like, let me go into Maricopa County. Like, how does he? Like, well, and then he goes back. Let me look at 2016 in comparison to 2020. And if this goes, it's unbelievable. Because one.
I was watching the coverage the other day, and I thought it was hilarious. Like, they're trying to, like, exactly what you're talking about, like, breaking down counties. And I think it was, I want to say it was Cuomo. It was Cuomo, I think, and someone else doing the breakdown.
Chris
and they're
Cuomo.
Like, yeah, Chris Cuomo.
Right.
But then the guy that feels the need, like, they're trying to go back and, like, you know, decide what the number is. So the guy does the touchscreen, and he's like actually, like, using his finger to write the number. Meanwhile, the breakdown is right next to them. Like, the percentages right. And the numbers are right next to them. He's like, oh, here it is. We actually have it on the screen already.
Oh, yes. I didn't.
It's like trying to make the guy do the
juggle. It's a lot of juggling.
That's just why. I mean,
that's
to prove your point. It's not easy what they're doing.
No, you go into the counties, and it's a whole different ballgame.
He's pulling out counties.
He's pulling up counties. 800-919-3776. So the great Rich Cimini going to join us in about 20 minutes to get into the Jets. What are you laughing about?
You just, I don't know. Sometimes you kill me, man.
What? With what?
Just how you say stuff makes me laugh.
All right. Well, that's good.
It's very good.
So I was thinking more about this yesterday, about your Daniel Jones benching him. And the more I think about it, and I heard Kay discussing it yesterday on his show, I don't want to do that. Even if he's bad, even if it means you lose games, even if it means that he continues to turn the football over, Rick, I don't want to bench him.
No, I know, but here's the thing, though, Dave. You're speaking from the standpoint of a fan. I'm telling you what's going on inside that locker room. That's what I'm speaking to. Like, at a certain point, your coach is, you know, standing in front of the locker room talking about accountability and everything else. Andrew Thomas misses a meeting. We're going to bench him. You know, Golden Tate, his wife acts up on Instagram. We're going to send you home. Like it. Everyone in that locker room is trying to win football games. No one wants to be on a losing football team. And if you can point to one person that's costing you games, and the only reason he's playing is because he was a 6th overall draft pick, and the GM's job depends on him having success, that rubs a lot of guys in the locker room the wrong way. I'm not saying sit him for the entirety of the season, but at a certain point, you got to send the message. Like, what's most important? Is it the culture you're building inside that locker room, or is it the young quarterback?
And it's close. I get exactly what you're saying, Rico. But also, what's going on in that locker room is those guys are looking around and they're saying, "Who else is in the quarterback room? We gonna roll with Colt McCoy as our guy?" So, I mean, you could say bench Daniel Jones, give the kid a second to breathe, you know, and just try to process everything that's happening to him and then put him back out there. But, I mean, it's clear that if you put Colt McCoy out there, you don't have as good a chance of winning games versus Daniel Jones. And I guess from a guys in the locker room standpoint, like, the guys want the coach to give them a chance to win every single week. Like, we talk about that with the Jets. Like, they don't believe in Adam Gase's game plan or his path to victory from Sunday to Sunday. I mean, if you're Joe Judge and you're preaching accountability and doing everything that it takes to win, and then you all of a sudden sit down a quarterback who we all recognize gives us the best chance to win because you want to send a message to him, I mean, that's almost like cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Yeah, but I don't think it's just sending a message to him. I think it's sending a message to the entire team.
Okay, you're sending a message to the entire team. Okay, we're going to bench Daniel Jones because he's got to be accountable. Meanwhile, the other 52 guys in the locker room don't have as good a chance to win this coming Sunday.
Yeah, but how do you know that? I mean, you don't know that. I mean, there are plenty of times, you know, you play a backup goalie who people don't think is as
Rico,
good a starter,
I played,
and the team rallies around
him. I played in the NFL over a decade. I've seen Colt McCoy up close and personal. Trust me, Daniel Jones gives you a better chance to win than Colt McCoy. He does. Now, if you want to argue that, okay, that's fine. But I'm just telling you, based on my experience in the game and seeing it up close and personal, Colt McCoy limits what you can do offensively. He makes your offense easier to defend. And it's an offense that struggled to move the ball consistently throughout the season. The last couple of weeks, they've actually started to put together some drives. I mentioned it before. I mean, the Giants, in the game against the Bucs, put together 4 double-digit play drives. When's the last time we've seen the Giants do that in any game this season? So it seems like the offense is trending in the right direction. I don't know if you want to interrupt that by pulling Daniel Jones and putting in a more limited quarterback in Colt McCoy.
I I guess the question remains is just, do you need to see Daniel Jones for eight games? Or do you need to set the tone and you know, make the locker room respect you if you're the head coach?
The locker room respects winning, Dave. The locker room respects winning. And we just want the guy under center that gives us the best chance to win. Now, granted, Daniel Jones turning the ball over at the rate that he has this year, or at the rate that he has since he's gotten to the NFL, makes it hard to win football games. But even with that being said, every single game except for the 49ers game, which was week three of the regular season, has been a fourth quarter game. In this past game against one of the best teams in the NFL, and certainly one of the best teams in the NFC, came down to a two-point conversion.
Yeah, but it should never come down to a two-point conversion. If Daniel Jones was better, that game would have been won.
Yeah, but I'm just asking you this question. If Colt McCoy is your starting quarterback in that game, is it even that close?
I don't know. I haven't seen what Colt McCoy looks like.
Okay.
Do I think that Nick Mullins is better than Jimmy Garoppolo? No, but they have success with Nick Mullins. The biggest problem for the New York Giants over the last how many years has
been
accountability.
They had success with Nick Mullins because Nick Mullins actually had to play in games and won games for them. The players in the locker room had actually seen it. We've seen Colt McCoy in the NFL. This is not his rookie year. We know what he is, and more importantly, we know what he ain't. And that's my point. You can say you want to see it all you want. I think the priority should be seeing Daniel Jones as much as we can.
I don't want to have to see it.
You're trying to make an argument that the guys in the locker room, if you're preaching accountability, want you to hold the quarterback accountable. That goes to a certain point, and it stops right at the point where the guys in the locker room look around and they say, this dude don't give us as good a chance to win as Daniel Jones. There ain't nobody in that Giants locker room that feels like Colt McCoy gives them a better chance to win than Daniel Jones. Stop it.
What's the biggest problem been with the New York Giants over the last how many years? When they've been the worst, I mean, win-wise, the worst team in the NFL. What has it been? Has it been the culture of the team?
It's been awful.
Okay, it's been awful. So what happens now? You go into Washington and your defense plays great and Daniel Jones has two turnovers and you lose that game. You think the guys are still saying that same thing in the locker room? I didn't say that you should consider benching him now. I said what he's doing is he's making it hard on Joe Judge. The more he does this, the more he jeopardizes Joe Judge's credibility. This is what's going to happen.
I just think Joe Judge is in a tight spot, period. And it's not going to change until the end of the season because he's limited in terms of what he can do at the quarterback position. And you got a guy that you invested the 6th overall pick in 2 years ago. You might as well play out the string, see exactly what you got, and then you make a definitive determination. Now, in 2021, if things don't change and you're still rolling with Daniel Jones and there isn't a better option to potentially turn to, then I think you got a problem in terms of the credibility of your coach's message. But right now, Joe Judge is in the infancy stages of program building. And based on the early returns, based on what we're seeing this team do in terms of being competitive, I don't feel like he's in any jeopardy of losing this team.
Can he keep the team for the last eight games if Daniel Jones continues to be the quarterback and continues to struggle with turning the football over? That would be my question. And if he can, I don't see a reason why you wouldn't start him.
Yeah, based on what I've seen, Dave, I don't feel like Joe Judge is in jeopardy of losing the team. It could happen. I just don't think it will.
I think Joe Judge is great. I really like Joe Judge. My point is that Daniel Jones is going to make it difficult on him. The more he plays the way that he's playing and turning the football over every single game, and now you've got a game you can directly point to Daniel Jones as the reason why you lost the game.
Yes.
I don't care what you think of the backup quarterback. Like that, at a certain point, enough is enough.
What I'm telling you is the guys in the locker room do care what the backup quarterback is capable of doing. Now, I've been there. I've had to go out there with backup quarterbacks. It does matter. And if you have a better option, if you have a quarterback that gives you a better chance to win, then forget about trying to send a message. We want a chance to win.
Yeah, but how good is the option?
That's the most important part of your message.
Yeah, but how good
is the messaging? The messaging is trying to lead to the result of being more competitive in winning games. That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, but how good do you think the option is if you watch him turn the football over every single game? At a certain point, you're like, okay, I mean, as good as he can be, he turns the ball over every single game. I know talent-wise, Colt McCoy is not as good as Daniel Jones, but I mean, maybe we can go into a game where the quarterback doesn't turn the football over and actually give ourselves a chance to win. We won't have the same kind of explosive offense, but maybe just protecting the football is enough. I mean, how good a chance does he give you to win if he turns the ball over twice a game?
You're not going
to
win
in critical spots.
We thought that same thing about Brooks Bollinger.
No, I listen. But at this point, I know what you're saying. And theoretically, I agree with everything you're saying. I would rather see Daniel Jones for the last 8 games to make a decision one way or another. But when you're trying to build the foundation, you're trying to build the culture. I mean, at a certain point, you do have to hold every single player in the locker room accountable.
And Joe Judge could hold Daniel Jones accountable at the end of the season if he doesn't stop that turnover problem. Joe Judge holding Daniel Jones accountable doesn't have to be about Joe Judge sitting Daniel Jones right now. It could be about the Giants making a decision as an organization that he's not our guy and taking somebody at the top of next year's draft because they're in position to do so. That could be the version of it. I don't necessarily believe it has to happen over the next 8 games. I don't think it has to happen this week. And I'm saying that based on the Giants and what options they have in that quarterback room. Like, I don't look at any viable alternative that puts them in position to be more competitive than Daniel Jones.
I think what makes it more of a conversation is the fact that the NFC East is so bad.
It's really unfortunate because you should have won the last 2 games. And if you would have won the last 2 games, we'd be sitting here talking about the Giants can absolutely win this division.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you would have won the game against the Eagles if Evan Engram catches the dime that Daniel Jones throws.
You're right. I don't blame Jones for that loss. Evan Engram's got to make that catch every single time. But the loss this week, and I would play Jones, but the loss this week was because of him. The team played well enough that they should have won it, and they didn't because of him.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I still go back to thinking Daniel Jones gives you the best chance to win games. That's why it makes it such an easy answer for Joe Judge when people are asking, is Daniel Jones still your quarterback? Yeah, I ain't got no choice.
Yeah, see, I don't know if I agree with that.
That's fine.
I understand what you're saying. Talent-wise, Daniel Jones gives you the best opportunity. Just like in New England, I think that talent-wise, Cam Newton gives you the best opportunity. And the other two, I hate the other two options. But, I mean, if the Giants went into a game where their defense played the way their defense played, if you have a quarterback that just doesn't turn the football over in that game, you probably win that game.
Yeah, but here's the thing, I'm thinking about your argument. You're saying you wouldn't say bench Daniel Jones if the NFC East wasn't so bad and if the division wasn't so close. Well, I mean, if the division is close, don't you want the quarterback that gives you the best chance to win every single week?
Yeah, but I don't know how you can keep saying the quarterback that gives you the best. If the quarterback continually turns the ball
believe it. Maybe you just have to see Colt McCoy before you're willing to believe it. So if that happens, we'll see what comes out of that.
But maybe it also gives you a better appreciation for how good Daniel Jones is. But like, I know when I watch the Jets, as bad as they are, when I watch the Jets without Sam Darnold, I actually have more of an appreciation for Sam Darnold because the team is horrendous without him.
But what difference does that make if it doesn't change the record? If the record is, if you're 1-7 through the first 8 games of the season, what difference does that make? Oh, we're a lot worse without Daniel Jones than with him. Okay, that's great, but what does that make you?
It makes you willing to hold somebody accountable for making mistakes every single week. And if that means you end up losing the game, I mean, you got one win anyway. But I couldn't imagine being in that locker room having to play football of all sports. I mean, the most dangerous of all the sports, going into every single game thinking that, you know, at some point he's going to turn the ball, we're going to lose.
Yeah, I understand that. But guess what, Rick? I actually did it. I've been in those situations. I've done it. And I'm telling you, as a player, because you're putting yourself in harm's way, don't try to bench somebody to send a message. Give me the guy that gives us the best chance to win. Okay, you're not getting along with Terrell Owens? I don't care, Jason Garrett. I don't care, Tony Romo. We need T.O. on the field because guess what? The guy gives us the best chance to win. He can go for 1,500 yards in a regular season, double-digit touchdowns. Who cares? That's what I'm saying. The whole culture building stuff matters up into a point. But if you don't give me the best chance to win based on the guys that we got on this roster, then I'm not trying to hear what you're talking about.
See, the thing I don't understand what you're saying is how you feel like if Daniel Jones turns the ball over twice every single game, how is he the one giving you the best opportunity to win?
Rick, every single game is a fourth quarter. We're talking about it now. Every single game they're competitive in. Every single game comes down to the fourth quarter, except for the one against San Francisco. Every single game, you're right there. So the hope is if you can continue to be right there, over the next 8 games, maybe you'll find yourself on the winning side of those, especially with the schedule starting to lighten up a bit. You got chances to win real football games coming up. You got the Washington football team. You're at home against the Eagles. Then you got a bye week. Then you got Cincinnati. Those are 3 opportunities to win football games. I don't want you to bench Daniel Jones now to try to send a message to him and go with an inferior quarterback in Colt McCoy.
All right, let's bring him in. Covers the Jets so well for such a long time, and that is, of course, Rich Cimini. Good morning, Rich. How are you? Rich, good morning. How you doing? All right, then.
He's speechless.
Rich has nothing to say.
That is the state of the Jets. Yes. Speechless.
He said everything he has to say about the New York Jets.
Oh, my gosh.
What do you
Jets
guys
struggle
think?
With football.
You got to laugh. Yeah. You got to laugh to keep from crying if you're talking about the Jets or if you're a Jets fan. You just have to.
You need to have that come to Jesus moment of like, this is just what it is. It's just like, I can't get myself crazy because it's just so awful. Sit there, put your feet up, eat your face off, and watch the Jets. And not get yourself nuts with every single play. Otherwise, you'll have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, you know that can happen, though.
There's no way you watch these games like crazed on every play.
I'm not crazy on every play, but I get aggravated, I get frustrated.
So Jets lose 35-9 to Kansas City, and you're beside yourself at home?
There are certain plays during the course of a game that get me pissed off. Yeah, you're a professional athlete. You're getting paid a ton of money to play this sport. Your coach is getting paid a ton of money. If the guy calling the game, if Trent Green calling the game, is pretty much telling you because he had a conversation with the other head coach that they're probably going to have a fake punt here, and I got Pierre Desir has no idea what the hell is going on, that pisses me off.
Yeah, that play I do understand. But let's bring him in now. I think he's got words, and that is Rich Cimini. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You know what? Rick just mentioned something, and I want to throw this your way. We've seen the Jets really bad in the past. We've seen Kotite. We've seen 1-15. We've seen laughingstock of the NFL. Have you ever seen worse than this? Is this the worst Jets team that you've ever covered? You've been doing this a very long time.
Yeah, this is clearly the worst Jet team I've ever covered because you mentioned the Kotite. I mean, obviously 1-15 speaks for itself, but you know those teams, they were actually competitive in a lot of games that year. They finished 11th in total offense that year, so they were actually moving the ball. They were just playing bad defense and losing games. This team is not even competitive in the games. So how many games have they lost by more than 20? You guys probably know better than me, but it seems like every game. And so I would say for sure this team is the worst one I've covered.
Rich, can you explain something to me? I lean on Canty. He won a Super Bowl. He was, on the defensive line of, one of the, listen, in my opinion, one of the greatest runs I've ever seen. And the fact that I get to be with Canty, I lean on him for some advice and when we break down football. So I asked him when we were watching that Kansas City Jets game, was the mindset going into that game that we're gonna shut down the run, so God forbid Lev Bell actually has a good game and embarrasses us, and then let Pat Mahomes, Super Bowl MVP, maybe the greatest quarterback we've ever seen, we'll let him try to beat us. How does that make any sense going into a game against the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, I saw that. You guys were talking about that the other day, right? Because I saw something on the ESPN.com website about that thought. And so I actually did some research on that. There's no way that would. So you're saying the Jets went in just to stop Bell so it wouldn't embarrass them. And
or stop
then they
the
didn't
run.
Really,
that's all they did was stop the run. That was it.
Well, I looked it up. They played nickel the entire game. So they had 5 defensive backs on the field the entire game. They even had nickel when Kansas City went to 2 tight ends, which was about, I think, 8 or 10 plays in the game. So I don't think your argument holds water. I mean, the Jets cut Bell for a reason. I mean, they don't think he's a great running back anymore, and I think you saw it in the game. He didn't do anything, and it wasn't because the Jets were keying on him. I think it was just because he is who he is at this point in his career. He was the only guy that day that really stopped the Kansas City offense, to be quite honest. And no, the Jets were not overplaying Bell and the run just so they wouldn't get embarrassed by him.
You say that, Rich, but the Jets played predominantly single high coverages. So you're talking about cover 1, cover 3. I mean, that's essentially a lot of man coverage. Even with cover 3, it turns into man coverage outside the numbers late in the down. So I mean, why were they, you know, majoring in 8-man fronts when you have one of the most explosive offensive attacks in the national passing attacks in the National Football League?
I checked on that one too. Thank God for next gen stats because we can look up all this stuff.
Yeah.
They had no 8-man fronts in the game, and I think they played a 7-man front a handful of plays, mostly six man fronts, light boxes. I think they played a lot of zone in the game. In fact, the long touchdown where Ashton Davis got beat and he fell down, that was a Tampa 2. So I don't know the exact breakdown of man.
I know I can, Rich. I'm just saying this in football when there's a deep free safety in the middle of the field, that's either cover one or cover three. I'm not a smart man, but I can tell you when there's a deep safety in the middle of the field, that's cover one or cover three. So that's what I'm basing it on. Why would you play those coverages?
Cover one is their base coverage. I mean, that's what the Jets play most often.
Yeah, but you're playing that against Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and company. Why would you do that? You know that corner has been a soft spot for your team. Why wouldn't you have more two-shell looks?
Yeah, well, I think they did in the game, Chris. I mean, I'd love to – I wish I had my laptop here. I'd look it up for you. But if I were the Jets in that game, I might have played an extra DB. I might have gone to six DBs just to play a little rope-a-dope and make them run the ball, like make Pat Mahomes see all the small bodies out on the field and say, I'm going to check to a run. I mean, that's what I would have done. But the Jets, you know, they didn't do that. I would have wanted Le'Veon Bell to run the ball if I were the Jets because that would have been – I think that was the weakest guy in their offensive arsenal. So, I mean, look, Chris, you know more football than I do for sure. But, I mean, in that particular game, I don't think that was the Jets' strategy.
Okay, let me ask you another question, Rich, because I wanted to get into this a little bit. And this has been one of those things that's been bothering me for a couple of days now. With Joe Douglas doing the interviews – with the various media outlets earlier this week. I mean, he took on a lot of the blame for what's going on with this team. Obviously, they don't plan on being winless halfway through the season. He talked about some of the issues that they had personnel-wise, injuries, lack of depth, and all of those things being on him. Players need to execute better. But when it comes to Adam Gase, I mean, he didn't want to point the finger, and I can understand why he wouldn't do that. But why does he have a problem acknowledging that Adam Gase needs to do a better job? I know it's something that's the obvious, but why do they have problems in the Jets organization stating the obvious about their head coach?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think Joe definitely took some bullets there. Some of them he deserved to take, and some of them were probably – he was taking some for his coach there. So I think he was probably – maybe out of loyalty. I think that was my one criticism. I agree with you. He probably should have said something like, look, we all need to do better. We need to coach better. We need to play better. You know, we need to do a better job in the front office. You know, that would have been, you know, the statement that probably Jet fans would want to hear because Adam Gase is not coaching well. And, you know, it was almost like Joe was absolving him of blame that should have been on the head coach. And I agree with you. I think he was just trying to be a good guy, and that's a tough spot for him. I mean, we're interviewing a GM at the midpoint of the season. We all know the coach is going to get replaced at the end of the year. So, I mean, I think those are really tough questions, like the Sam Darnold question. Of course he's going to back Sam and say, we love Sam, you know, he's our guy. But the circumstances are going to change when they find out they're picking first or second in the draft and Lawrence and Fields are in the draft. You know, the circumstances are going to change then. So he was put in a tough spot, but I totally agree with you. He probably could have been a little harder on his coach.
Rich Simini with us here, 98.7 ESPN. I want to ask you about the future of the Jets, assuming that they're going to move on from the head coach. And this has bothered me for a long time, and it's been like this forever seemingly with this ownership group. Are we ever going to see the GM oversee the head coach, or is it always going to be the owner oversees the GM and the head coach separately?
Well, the Jets went to they used to be under that model up until 2015, you know, when John Itzik was the last GM to be under that model. And then when they hired Todd and Mike McCagnan in 2015, they switched to the current model. I don't like it. I mean, I think you can get away with a model like that if you have a really experienced owner who's been around for a long time and is involved in football. The Jets clearly don't have that situation. So a lot of this is on Christopher Johnson. I'd rather have an experienced football man like my GM making, you know, decisions on the head coach and for the organization. That's me. I'm more of a traditional guy. I like the older model. I think the Jets could switch. I don't think they're married to it. I think it depends on who they get. But, you know, I do think it's a problem.
Rich, what are the health updates for Sam Darnold in the wide receivers?
Well, I'll know very shortly. We're going to be out of practice. You know, they were encouraged by Sam. I mean, Sam was very optimistic about his MRI. I think he clearly aggravated that shoulder injury when he should have slid. I mean, I think he was beating himself up after the game. I mean, he should have slid on that play. That was a mental mistake. So I don't think his shoulder is 100%. I think he'll be limited in practice this week. But I think the feeling there is that they're hopeful that he'll play on Monday. The extra day certainly helps. As for the receivers, I think Perryman will be out of the concussion protocol this week. And Crowder, it's a really – I mean, you guys know, you guys are former athletes, those groin injuries, it's just – this almost reminds me of the C.J. Mosley injury from last year. I mean, we thought he's coming back, and then he has a setback. So this groin injury, I mean, they're hopeful on Crowder that he can play this week. But I think you just have to be a little cautious there because you just never know. If he does come back, if Perryman is back, this will be the first time ever, going back to training camp, that their starting three receivers would be on the field at the same time.
Rich, trade deadline just passed. Did the Jets get close to making any deals, making any moves?
I don't think so. You know, they were not shopping Quinnen Williams. They were not shopping Chris Herndon. I think they probably got some calls. I think the one rumor I kept hearing was that the Ravens might be interested in one of their tackles after the Ravens lost, you know, their great tackle, Ronnie Stanley. Yeah. So, you know, so maybe that was a possibility. That was a rumor going around. But Fant and Chuma Adoga, they're not great, but they are under contract for a couple of more years. And I think Joe Douglas was more in the mindset of just getting rid of expiring contracts. So, long answer to short. No, I don't think they got close to any deals.
Rich, you got any updates on my guy Bryce Hall?
Bryce Hall is he's getting close. I mean, he is in that window now where he can be activated at any time. So I think that window goes through November 11th. So if he doesn't play Monday against the Patriots, I certainly would say he would be on the active roster the following game after the bye week, which would be at the Chargers. They're really eager to see him, and you know, I think he's going to get a great opportunity to play over the second half of the year.
All right, Rich, we appreciate you. You're halfway home. Hang in there, and you're going to make it to the end of the season.
Well, you know, it's the same situation as '96. They were 0-8, and then they won a game, and it kind of ruined everything. So I think we'll see. We'll see if they can keep it going here.
Can you see them winning a game realistically, Rich? Do you think there's a game that's winnable on the schedule for this team?
Well, I think they have a shot on Monday night, but I think I'm still taking the Patriots. The Chargers are beatable, but, you know, on the road, you know, it's tough. Miami, I mean, I think the odds, I think there's a really good chance. Let me say, I think there's a decent chance they go 0-16. And how about that? I mean, I can't believe I just said that, but that is a reality that we must confront.
Welcome to 2020. Rich, good stuff as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, there you have it. That is Rich Cimini. A pretty good chance sitting here at 0-8 that this team is going to be 0-16. I mean, do you guys see the win on the schedule? It's hard to imagine.
I don't see the win on the schedule. People are talking about this week with the Patriots. I don't see that on Monday Night Football. I got to be honest with you guys. The Jets are going 0-16. They're going 0-16. They're going to join that club. There will be four teams since the merger that have gone 0-4. The perfect season, imperfect season, I don't know what you want to call it, but the Jets are not winning a game this year.
It's tough to argue that. I mean, you look at just numbers and stats and everything else. I mean, it's startling, really.
I mean, just
I think the question is, are they going to be classified as the worst team of all time?
If they keep this up.
I mean, I think that's a legitimate conversation.
They lose every game. They're not even competitive in these games. They lost to Buffalo by 8, and we were like celebrating, like, oh, they kept it close. Only because Buffalo's kicker missed 2, and they couldn't score touchdowns. That could have easily been a 24-point game.
Dave, Rich just asked the question early on in the interview. Half of their losses have been by 20 points or more. Half. That's not competitive.
Did you? I don't know if you heard what Greeny said yesterday. I couldn't believe this. So I guess, who is AFC player of the week? Because Mahomes must have been AFC offensive
Mahomes,
player
it was
of the
Mahomes,
week.
Yeah.
He said 5 times the AFC offensive player of the week has come from the opponent of the Jets.
Yeah, I can believe that.
I mean, that's staggering stuff, guys. It's bad. It's bad. You know what's staggering in a good way, though? Rick, I know you love this. The Michael Kay Show's 20 and 20 contest continues today at 3. Make sure you're listening for your chance at 20 great prizes over 20 days to make your home life a little more enjoyable. You know what today's giveaway is? You have any
idea? I do, but I don't want to spoil it.
Well, I'm going to say it right now. The guys are giving away the Bartesian. Not Bart Scott. They're giving away a home cocktail maker that automatically draws from your chosen spirits and dispenses a premium cocktail at the touch of a button like that in seconds. It's that simple. That could be yours. All you have to do is listen. They play this easy audio. You get it right, and you win. It's just that simple. It's the 20 in 20 contest brought to you by PC Richard and Son, Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian Premium Cocktails on Demand, and, of course, 98.7 ESPN.
Can't wait.
Let's bring them in. Everyone's favorite, the award-winning Andy in Merrick. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. I have a very special College Football Thursday for you.
Ooh.
Rather than the standard 4 questions, in the tradition of the Michael Kay Show, I have a 5th audio challenge question for you.
Nice. Will it be as easy as the Kay Show questions?
Probably. Mm-hmm. That being said, from Philadelphia yesterday, it's a short drive to Happy Valley, home of the Penn State Nittany Lions. And I'll start you guys off with the fact that there's only one retired number from Penn State
John
University.
John Cappelletti.
Football. Yes, their only Heisman Trophy winner as well.
1973.
Yes, sir. This Nittany Lion quarterback holds the school record. 454 passing yards in a single game. Who is he?
Who in a single game?
I mean, that could be anywhere because it's just one great game. I mean, could it be Blackledge?
They didn't throw so much back in the early 80s.
I mean, Trace McSorley. I'm brainstorming with my guys.
Okay.
Was it Trace McSorley? Could it be the Hackenberg? Would be appropriate.
Does it have a New York feel to it?
Yeah, it does.
Hacky. It's the Hackenberg.
It is the Hackenberg. Or
good thing
the
Hindenburg, good thing we kept him instead
of him.
Good thing we kept him instead of drafting Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, it was close, though.
This running back, formerly from the NFL, is the only Penn State player to rush for more than 2,000 yards in a season. Name him.
2,000 yards in a season.
Is that Larry Johnson?
It is. Wow. Take that diaper off.
Oh, I should have known that. I should have known that.
Yes. LJ, amazingly.
I think one of them games was against Virginia.
Amazingly, in 2002, he had 4 separate games over 250 rush yards.
He was a great running back. Yep.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was.
This current NFL wide receiver holds the school record.
Allen Robinson.
With 97 receptions. David, you're killing me, man. All right. Do not jump on this audio file, my friends. The Ryan T. Hurley special. This gentleman holds the school record for season tackles with 165. Hit that audio.
Hey, listen, if I want Adam Ginsberg to do my DJing at my parties, I'll ask him personally.
I think we all know.
Greg
Buttle. Take this one?
Say it,
boys. Yeah, it's Greg Buttle.
Yeah,
Gregory Ellis Buttle, almost 50 years later, still holds the school record for tackles in a single season. And, of course, he can be heard on Jets Game Day every Sunday morning, 98.7 ESPN Radio. Fellas, as always, let's be careful out there and stay healthy, boys.
Thank you, Andy. He's better than some of the hosts at the station at promoting things coming up.
No, he's unbelievable.
He really is.
I mean, he's promoting the the assistant. He's promoting the
program director gets a shout out. The K Show's 20 and 20 with the audio gets a shout out. Talking about the Jets pregame and postgame show gets a shout out. Everybody gets a shout out.
Do you know what he's done?
He's that guy that you give him like you give him a taste and you see what he's capable of. And now he's a part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like he's working for the station
and capitalized on it. Good for him. It's now a bit. He's got his big his entry. You know, good morning, DCR. Stay healthy, my friend. Like he's got the whole thing. Questions good, in and out. It's terrific. Does a good job.
Good. All he needed was one shot.
Andy's
DCR.
The best, man. Andy's the best. Andy's
all he needed
best.
Was one shot. You gave him a shot.
That's right. We give him a shot. He runs through that door and look at him. Now.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Kicks them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.